where strategy gaming meets good vibes. No stress, just critical moves.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to Critical Moves Podcast, a podcast about strategy, and that's exactly what we're here for, to discuss about strategy. I'm joined here with Nuno.
Hello, everyone.
And Al.
Good evening.
And indeed, strategy is what we're talking about today, in specific strategies, the games we played. Does one strategy work for the other game? What do we enjoy? What kind of strategy do we enjoy employing as well? How do we enjoy murdering our opponents? All right, first things first, what's some of your favorite strategies that you've been able to use during your strategy gaming?
Well, I'll keep it very generic, and I think this comes down to a choice between either being a turtler, which is me, I am the king turtle, or a rushing, aggressive player. And I think a lot of that probably comes down to confidence. We discussed last week, I don't like to play multiplayer because I'm an awful combination of extremely competitive and really, really bad. So it never ends well for me. So I prefer to sit back, build an impregnable fortress, and take it from there. And that's in RTS games, I guess. But even Stellaris, I know we've talked about that for like 4 weeks in a row now, but I would often like to play tall rather than wide, look at choke points, and really focus on getting a good, strong defense rather than being aggressive and pushing out. I think sometimes I think that it's because it's a lot more complicated and difficult to micromanage when you're going out on the offensive, whereas as a turtle player you can sit back, take your time, and it's a bit more forgiving.
What games were you talking about, Al?
RTS games. So off the top of my head, Supreme Commander, Total Annihilation. I always remember back in the day playing Total Annihilation on homemade island maps, where I could just build like a little island. Command and Conquer Generals, that was always a good one, where you could play against teams of AI enemies and really take your time building up really, really good defenses before then being quite surgical in how you took out the enemy forces.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much the same as Al, to be honest, because I think it's going to be a very short episode, because I'm also a turtler. probably because I just not I'm also bad at playing games, like really bad at every game I play. But I think this started just because I had fun turning RTS games into almost city builders. When I started playing Age of Empires back in the day, I just wanted to build my city, and medieval cities had to have walls, so I just built walls. And then you just said, oh, instead of one wall, let me build two, or now three, or now let me wall the whole island. And just eventually you get something that's absolutely impractical and totally unrealistic. But it's super fun to do, because it's also a way to prolong gameplay, because you're planning long term, right? You're having fun with the game. You're just using the game itself as a tool to enjoy yourself, and you can only do turtling with a single player, right? Because players tend to be very aggressive in competitive RTS, so games don't last for a week. They can go on for like half an hour and be over with.
It's a very interesting point, and I think I'd like to come to our resident multiplayer expert here, Timothy. When you're playing Beyond Our Reason, because I know you play it competitively, do turtle players actually succeed?
There's a lot to it, because there's a different element in the competitive multiplayer scene where the quote-unquote turtling is not as much called turtling, but it's like the greedy part. So what it does is you can be aggressive and try to rush down the enemy, or you can try to play economically greedy. So expanding your economy very early on with very few units, and that gives you like a big advantage, but that's punishable if the enemy rushes you, basically. So the turtling is more called being greedy and like investing a lot in your economy before investing into units, basically.
Because that's one of the things which has always put me off playing multiplayer games is that, and I have in the past. I mean, I remember playing Command & Conquer Generals back in probably 2003, and trying that multiplayer against a guy that I met on gaming forums, and he rushed me, and it was over within minutes, and I just thought. Mm-hmm. This is the amount of time that you take to set it up and to get ready to play, and then it's finished. And I just thought, well, you know, where's the fun? And I know people have often like local rules where, you know, you can't attack for the first 5 minutes and you know, that kind of thing. But as a general rule, that just it isn't fun.
I have good news for you.
Getting steamrolled in the first minute.
I have good news for you, Al. I don't want to turn this into a Beyond All Reason episode here, but I will not shy away either from advertising it. You know how last week we mentioned we might get you on stream to play the game? Well, the game features a PvE game mode where you're basically playing tower defense, and there's like hordes of enemy that are coming towards your base, and you're cooperating to together basically hold them off.
It's like a survival mode.
Yeah.
On that topic, I would like to ask you guys, have you played the game They Are Billions? Or do you know about it?
Yeah. It's a similar concept, yeah.
And what about Age of Darkness? It just came out. It's pretty much the same as They Are Billions, but instead of zombies, it's just otherworldly or nightmarish creatures. Super fun. I love the game. It also has a campaign, so not just single player. And the basis of the game is just turtling. You're building up your town / castle, and you're just building defenses and defending against the hordes of creatures that come every fortnight to try and destroy the humans. I should try it. Those are fun games.
Because when you were talking about playing defensive, a game that made me think of that with the building of the walls and stuff, that's like Stronghold. And you can even play that game multiplayer, even against each other, and you're a lot of what you're doing is still turtling up by default, because a lot of the game is building up just towers and the walls and the drawbridges and the moats and everything. So I think there are some games that even multiplayer, player versus player, it promotes this kind of turtling game.
It might promote it, but you can't win a match just by sitting back. Eventually you've got to go out and attack.
True.
And that brings me to the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is it seems to me that we're seeing a move away from the tank rush. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember back in the day playing Red Alert, you could build 20 Soviet heavy tanks and you could just wipe the floor with anything that came against you. It seems like we're moving away from that, where you need to be looking at combined arms. You know, you're much more effective. And I think this is perhaps a change in tact from developers. They realize that people are capable of more complex thinking, capable of more complex strategies and complex tactics. So your combined arms is typically the effective way of winning these kind of matches, certainly in RTS games, you know, because you have a degree of rock, paper, scissors. There's always one thing which can defeat another thing. So, for example, in Supreme Commander, you send Rhino tanks from the Cybern across to attack the UEF, and the gunships will take you out. So you need to include anti-air, you need to include air cover, you need to include mobile shields and that kind of thing in order to make this attack an effective one. Otherwise, it's just wiped. But when you go back to 95, 96, when Red Alert first came out, Command & Conquer first came out, it was a very effective strategy, was just to get a group of tanks and just steamroll. And it's quite nice, I think you'll agree, to see that there's a shift towards introducing slightly more complex strategies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And well, one aspect of the whole strategy part, you mentioned the rock, paper, scissor. And I think a huge aspect of strategy, and I think that's quite important to be implemented in these games, is basically scouting. Gathering information on what the opponent is doing, and then so that you can react to that. And I don't know how you guys feel as like what you guys call yourself as turtle players, but I think a big aspect of strategy in general, be it even in real life warfare or in video games or wherever it is, it's about finding out what the opponent is doing and reacting to it. And this reactive part, I think, is quite important to the concept of strategy to me personally.
Yeah, it's a game mechanic. It's called Fog of War, right, in most games. And like, as someone who plays a lot of war games, there's a general rule in warfare, which is the first one to see is the first one to kill, usually. So that happens a lot in wargaming as well when you're playing. If you know where your enemies are, you can act in a way that they can't, because they don't know where the attack is coming from. So like, war games are very different from RTS in the aspect that when you're playing an RTS, you usually, when you're fighting, it's always happening on the same screen, right? Like, imagine if you see a match of StarCraft, you can see that most of the battle is happening on one screen, and you pretty much know where your opponent is. But when you're playing war games, like some of the titles go to their extreme to obfuscate information from you, and I think this dictates a lot what the kind of tactics you're going to use and what kind of equipment you're going to employ. But that also means that you can't be as turtly as you would be on other games, because then you're a target, because you're always on the same place, right? So it's not about just, oh, let me build walls. But if you're talking about modern warfare, then those walls aren't going to do shit for you, because you're just going to get like heavy artillery fire from 20 miles away, and you're gonna end up dying. So I like playing this kind of two different strategies of being aggressive in war games, and super aggressive, and then in RTS, I think it's super fun to turtle. But yeah, I think Fog of War plays a massive role in strategy.
And maybe that's the issue where you say it's much more fun to be a turtle when it comes to RTS games. I think that we are predominantly single player gamers. Yes. And I think that when I play a game, I play because I want to enjoy the experience of playing it. And perhaps I've watched some speedruns of Command & Conquer Generals on YouTube, where they are cheesing the map or cheesing the unit mechanics in order to, you know, finish a mission as quickly as possible. They're doing a mission in a minute, which will take me 30 or 40. Not because, because I want to enjoy the experience of building up and slowly moving across and exploring and being creative with different attacks, using artillery, using air, using special forces, rather than just saying, right, well, if I put my rangers in this Chinook and drop them into this area where they can't be seen, I can start capturing power plants, and the match is over before it's even began, really. It's challenging, and I can see why people do it, but it's not fun.
Yeah, that's something that I'm thinking about as well. When you're talking about single player experience, a lot of it is that city building experience, right? And like the building up of your forces and like gathering your forces. And I guess what I like to see in single player campaigns, I mean, I say this as the multiplayer guy, right? But like when the maps are a little bit more unique and you have to approach the map in a new way and you're kind of learning the skill of the strategy while you're playing the single player game, because it poses new challenges to you that you have to learn new skills to play them. Did you remember like campaigns like this that would challenge you a bit with the strategy? You can't just do the same thing over and over again.
I think what I like in campaigns in strategy games is how they are able to use the game mechanics to provide a unique experience just for that mission, you know, just to be... I hate it when gaming campaigns are just skirmish mode, but with some cutscenes. So I really don't like that. But when the game tries to use its mechanics to present you interesting challenges, I think that's super, super fun. And speaking our language, I think Red Alert 2 did that perfectly, because I remember pretty much every mission of that game, and they were all so different from one another. You always have like some small objectives you could do. You had different units. You have to adapt yourself to what kind of units you had available. So I love it when strategy games force you to, not necessarily force you to use different tactics, but they give you different challenges on every mission. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I think the Warcraft 3 campaign did that really well as well. And the cool thing about StarCraft and Warcraft is that they had these map editors that were very powerful. So players could make like their own kind of like custom maps and everything like that. And the cool thing is with Warcraft 3, the expansion, the Frozen Throne, they actually took some IDs from these custom maps and then implemented those IDs that people had made into the campaign. And then you had like maps that were very, very different from the typical experience. And like you had to really rethink the whole usual strategy that you're going of like, oh, now I'm building my base and now I'm recruiting units, I'm getting the upgrades, and now I have my army and I'm going over there to attack. You had to be quite creative with it.
Yeah, I'd say what's a really good game for doing that is Total Annihilation. And I know we're going back a long, long time now, but there was a really cool mission where you had the enemy, I think it's the artillery was called the Big Bertha, and it was, you had to move your commander across the map whilst this Big Bertha is firing at you, and it's very, very slow. But it was a complete change from the survive the initial attack, build up slowly, develop your tank horde, and then rush them. It was a completely different change. It very much like the commando missions that you got in the Red Alert series of games, where you would be in the underground laboratories and things like that. But one thing I really loved about TA was because of course you went through the Galactic Gates, that was how you progressed through the campaign for Total Annihilation. So you started off on Core Prime as the core. So it was a metal world where you just put down your metal extractors anywhere, because it was a metal world, and then you would go through the gate to perhaps the moon, where there was no atmosphere, so you couldn't use air power. Very subtle but very interesting change if you had become quite used to using air power to be successful. Still, suddenly you can't do it. Then you go through the next one, and it was onto a water world where you could only have ships. And it forced you to, you had to use a different type of unit. You had to use different types of strategies, because the ones that you were used to using on the level before were impossible to recreate. And that was thought was really, really interesting. I thought it was really clever of Cave Dog when they did that.
One thing that I find in the multiplayer part is that the strategies that you employ, they get tested against an opponent, and then the opponent adjusts to that and changes on the spot, and then you have to adjust their adjustment, and you have to just like back and forth a bit. So it's like a constant thinking of a meta thinking of what is happening between you and the opponent. And I guess that's something that I miss a bit with single player, is that I mean, it is a laid back experience, like you mentioned, but I really don't want to sound condescending when I say this, but it sounds a bit less strategic, if I can put it that way.
It is, you're right. And I think that the what I think is really, really lazy game design is where they change the difficulty levels just by giving the enemy more resources.
Oh, my goodness. Or, yeah, absolutely.
Or reducing the amount of time it takes them to build units. It's come on, man, you know.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that a lot of that is perhaps technical, technology which is available at the time. So you maybe couldn't have adaptive AI in the 2000s. But even newer games, I guess, can be guilty of that. And I think that if I want to play at higher difficulty, it's not just because they give people unfair advantages. It's because they give your opponent the ability to think.
Yeah.
But a computer opponent is never going to adapt to strategies like a human opponent will.
But I think it's really difficult to develop a complex AI that does that. And I think there's a reason. I don't think it's impossible. I don't think they can do it. And probably every year that we're moving, it's getting easier and easier to do it. But I think it just takes a lot of resources and to do it well too. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's something that could be coming up in the times to come, you know, where it's the AIs that they're developing today, if they could implement that into a game and have the AI be adaptive to you, that could be something really interesting, I think. And having the higher difficulty be seen that way rather than what you say.
No, you know what? It could be cool if we manage to get like Gen AI into video games this way. Is it?
Yeah.
Maybe. Like you could set yourself your own challenge. So you have a video game, say a World War II game, and you say, oh, now I want my AI to use the tactics that X general used. Like, I want to see Zhukov, so act like Zhukov, or act like Rommel, or like Montgomery, or whatever. I think that's a very interesting thought experience you could have. Imagine that you're playing a Napoleonic game, and you say, oh, please play less aggressive Napoleon and let's see what comes out of it. I think it's very cool because large language models have an incredible amount of resources behind it, and they have a massive amount of knowledge that a single coder can put to code, right? They cannot just adapt to all those variables. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what's the first game that's going to do this. I'm super excited for this, and I think that's For guys like us that enjoy, like me and Al, not excluding you, Tim, of course, but people who enjoy like single player experiences, that's going to be pretty revolutionary, because you can just, again, you can make your own fun. And for me, I think games are mostly strategy games are that, so I just make my own fun. Like I play a lot of games where I know I'm going to lose a battle, but I just do it because it's historically accurate or something like that. So. It might be stupid because I don't always play to win, or that might be an excuse because I'm bad. But that's what I tell myself when I cry.
It's just an excuse.
Yeah,
it's just an excuse.
But so would you say that the playing the online competitive thing? What you don't like about it is that there's another human there.
Me?
With their own emotions and everything like that. Yeah, because if you have an AI that like basically can play like a player and you're playing against them.
I can tell why I don't like it. Just like it's a mix of things. So first is that I'm a bit like also when I play games, I want to play games to relax, and I play at my own pace. So I don't want to be worrying about how much APM I'm getting out of that particular, or if my economy is optimized. And then it's like my headspace, or I don't like to memorize strategies, and I think a lot of RTS games are I mean, it's just a meta, it is what it is, right? So there's nothing you can do about it. It's the optimal way to play, and I don't like to play games in on an optimal way. I think that's very boring for me. I just like to fuck around.
I agree.
That's right. I want to like try give me my units, my tools, and give me my toolbox, and let me have some fun. And then there's the other problem, which is that I'm sometimes strapped for time, so I don't think I can ever like get invested into a 45-minute match because I need to have 45 minutes in a row to play, and I don't think that happens very often. So I also don't want to be playing with the other guy and just then leave on the middle of the match. I think that people who leave in the middle of the matches are and rude, and I hate leavers. This might be the League of Legends player in me getting annoyed, but I just play to have fun, and I think it's a lot more relaxed because you can save your game at any time. You can leave the computer, and you don't have to be totally invested in it, and you can just be having fun with something else, or maybe you can listen to a podcast or something. But I think that's more of you're just having fun. You're not competing with anything. I compete with people enough in my day-to-day life, so I don't like that again. But I can see why people do. Like I used to play League of Legends all the time.
It's casual, isn't it? That's the thing. It's casual, and like most gamers, you're a casual gamer like me. Like the majority of people who play these games, they play it for the experience, for the enjoyment. This you mentioned meta, and that's another thing which really I just think it takes the. And I'm not talking about Zuckerbot's company. I'm talking about the optimum way to play a game. It's like, where's the fun in that? I mean, we talked last week about playing games where they're forgiving, they allow you to try certain things, and maybe things don't work out, but it's not an instant loss just because you happen to go a different way on the map or build a one particular unit before another one just to see what it would be like. And this focus on, and I'm talking about StarCraft and things like that here, where you must follow this build order in order to be competitive. You must do these exact steps in order to be competitive. It's not creative, it's not interesting, it's just a bit boring, really. You
Well,
know, let me.
if I may.
You may.
So I'm actually with you on a lot of what you're saying. And actually there's like two types of gamers and strategy gamers and these type of competitive games. And I think we fall in the same category because they're categorized as honers and invaders. This is like a concept that's been floating around for a few years. Some people like to get really good at a skill and like repeat it a lot of times until they're like really, really, really good at it. Think about someone who does like the jumping over the on the Olympics, they're
The high
honers.
jump.
Yeah, they hone their skills basically. And there's innovators, and those people like to be creative and like find out new ways to do things and so on. And I think there's in a good video game, in a good strategy game, there's room for both. And that's like a very important balance to maintain in a way. And I think a lot of these strategy games have a lot of room for innovators. And when you say meta, I understand that you see it as like a very static thing, but from my personal experience, meta changes over time. And this change comes through innovators. So you have the honers, they hone a certain strategy until they've perfected it, and then the meta solidifies. And then the innovators find maybe a new alternative way to play the game, and then that changes towards that new meta, basically.
Yeah, I could see that a lot in League of Legends because I think the only game I've ever played competitively was League. Because I was decent at it. I think that's also a factor, just because like you need to have some skills to play these games online. And I'm not very good at just managing a lot of stuff at once in my strategy games, and that's why I like games, even real-time games, where I can pause and just relax a bit. But I can see why you say that. I think the meta changes a lot, but those changes happen every so often, right? They can like, and it also depends a lot on the state of the game, if the game is being updated or not. So because eventually things are gonna go full circle, right? You're gonna have a rock, paper, scissors meta.
Tim, it was quite interesting because when Tim mentioned the Olympics and the high jump, there was a particular way of doing the high jump, and then Dick Fosbury came along and he developed the Fosbury flop. And that so he was an innovator, but then that became the meta. And is that, do you not get the same sort of situation when you're playing these kind of competitive games where someone says, well, actually, let's try this instead, and it really, really works. Everyone says, that's the new way to do it. That's the new meta.
So, it depends on the game, and I personally find very little to no enjoyment into high jumping Olympics because it's all honing and no innovating. Whereas I think that there's some super cool strategy games that are complex enough that you can put a little bit of your personality into the game, into the strategy. Some people, they like to play greedy, some people like to play aggressive, some people like to do some weird, wacky thing and everything like that. And if the game is complex enough and it's like well balanced enough, and it's made in the right way, it actually allows for this expression of your character into the game. And I appreciate that enormously when that happens. And then you can have like this asymmetry, not just in like which faction you pick or something, but in personal play style. And then, sure, some are meta or some are sometimes a bit stronger than other, but there's a lot of back and forth with this like personal play style. And you see that in like a lot of like the top competitive games of strategy. Like different gamers have different play styles, and it's fun to watch. It's some fun to participate. And then I think it goes back to, you say it's rock, paper, scissor. Well, it goes back to my initial point of like scouting or like finding information on what your opponent does, and that being a big part of the strategy is like you identify what the opponent is doing and then you react to what they're doing.
So that's just mirroring real life, because if you
Yeah,
look at
absolutely.
any modern military, information is key. So intelligence gathering is the most important part of warfare. If you don't know where the enemy are, you can't fight them. If they can't see you, they can't shoot you. Which brings me on to a very interesting and lovely way to move on to the next point, which is realism in strategy. So, and this is where I want to bring Nuno in on this, because as our resident historian, when you look at the example I have is Rome Total War. So my typical, which is of course a predominantly single player game, my typical strategy is I have a line of heavy infantry with missile troops behind, skirmishers in front, and cavalry on the flanks. Because that's the most effective way for me to fight a particular battle. Is that how a Roman legion fought? Are you introducing real life strategies into a computer game?
I think that's an excellent question, and what I think about that is that it's not about the tactics that the game allows you to employ, but it's more about the systems that it allows you to use. So, Total War is a good example because what you described is basically a standard formation all across history. So you have your heavy infantry in a circle. You usually have your archers or your javelin guys skirmishing a bit and then falling back, and then you have the cavalry on the flanks, which was usually used to exploit gaps on the opposing infantry line. So that's actually correct. But the question is it a good tactic because you thought about it? Is it because it's the most effective all the time, or is it because you found it effective for the situations you were in? Because I remember being. I remember playing Total War and being like outnumbered And what I did was I had to adapt my tactics to use more of a concave line, so the enemy couldn't get around my flanks. Maybe juggle around the infantry and like use my spearmen instead of them being on the front row. Maybe they could be on the sides to avoid again being flanked by cavalry. Maybe I had to be more aggressive because they had a lot of archers. So yeah, I think historical games. What historical games allow us this to? You can connect with that because it's basic human experience, right? You when you're playing an historical title, you're using your own knowledge and your own interpretation of the situation. So and you're familiar with that. Usually when you're playing strategy games, you tend to be, I think people who like strategy like history most of the time, so you tend to be familiar with those kind of situations. But another game I would like to bring to that, and I think that it does these mechanics really well, and it represents what battles were like, not in a realistic sense, but in a thematical sense. It's Company of Heroes. So Company of Heroes realized that infantry combat in World War II was about the famous 4X. So you find your fix, you flank, and you finish your enemy. And Company of Heroes build a franchise around those mechanics, because until then, what you have in RTS games is just like two blobs fighting each other, and they can account for terrain and line of sight, but in Company of Heroes you had cover. And for me, that was like, I was a kid when it came out, but it was revolutionary because my guys can hide behind these barrels and they're shooting at the same time, and like this has an impact. And then you have suppression mechanics, which can keep the other guys down. So you can flank them and you can kill them, and you have a higher bonus like for attack if you attack them from the flank. So were battles actually fought like that at that close range? And of course not. Maybe sometimes they were, but most of the times they were not. But the core of the tactics is there. And I think that historical games don't have to be super realistic, but they need to be authentic, and they need to have you feel like that what you're doing makes sense. And that's why I think games like, for example, if you had Total War in World War II, would it work with those mechanics? I don't think so. You're going to have like a line of guys with machine guns fighting at one another. So the mechanics need to be adapted. An exercise I do when I'm reviewing games is to, if you strip down a game of its theme, do the mechanics still hold up? If they do, usually that's a great game. If they don't, then those mechanics really need to be adapted to the theme it's trying to emulate. I think it's fair to say that. So just, I know I'm rambling a bit, but let me bring another interesting game here, which is Starship Troopers from Slytherin. So Starship Troopers is a very weird game to adapt to strategy, to an RTS. Starship Troopers 7 Command, by the way. I know people comment that we should start saying the name more often. And what the team did was they looked at how you were supposed to fight against giant bugs, and what they realized was, how do you win battles if you're fighting with bugs? So you need to bring firepower to bear into that fight. So what's important here is line of sight, or line of fire in this case. So all the mechanics of the game are built around how many guys you can bring rifles to fire on the bugs, and how many rifles you have shooting at the bugs. And they built a very interesting game around that, where elevation matters, because only the front guys can fire, your back guys cannot fire over them. So unlike something like StarCraft, when if you have a bunch of guys, they can all fire at once, but in Starship Troopers they can't, because the line of sight is obstructed. So what you need to do is you need to account for terrain. Do you find higher terrain? Where do you position your guys to make sure that you have the most amount of firepower to attack the enemy? Maybe like you can bring the enemy into a funnel and kill them there more efficiently. And then you have some classes who have like very specific power, like flamethrowers and snipers and all that. But I think that teams and mechanics must go hand in hand well, very, very well together. Be the historical titles or sci-fi titles, I think that when a game manages to match those two, you usually have a great game on your hands. So I know, long answer, sorry about that. But no, passionate subject for me. I will enjoy this.
And I agree with what you're saying as well. And I feel like a good strategy game makes you feel smart for playing it. Like you're You're given these mechanics, you're given this toolbox that you can use, and you're given the opportunity to do something that makes you feel cool, makes you feel like, wow, I made this decision, and thanks to this decision, like, things are going well, and I feel smart for doing this, basically.
Oh, do you feel smart when you're playing your old man games?
It's not often that I feel smart. interesting point that you make about in the Starship Troopers game, where people at the back can't fire. But that was done in Empire Total War with your line infantry, where only the front rank can fire. But then you get new technology, which, and I thought it was quite interesting, where there's a technology which allows people to kneel down.
No, so it's front rank military fires. Doctrine. It's drills and all that.
So front rank fires, kneel down, next rank fires, kneel down, and how effective that was. So that's and you say, how would people fight giant bugs? Well, people don't fight giant bugs. We don't have them. You know, I'm not sure where they're drawing their experiences from.
That's why I said I can see like the designing team just thinking, if we were to fight, how would you? What would be the most important factor here? And if you watch the movie, you know that like how many? If you need to have like 10 guys fighting at one bug to kill it, so that's what it. And what you said is correct. I think Empire Total War does a decent job of portraying history and the way it was. It's authentic and it works well. It's not perfect because no game is. I think there are a lot of games that do that better, like Scourge of War. But yeah, and what I was trying to say is that it was not innovative for them to fire, like have a line of fire. Of course not. It's just the mechanic fits, right? It would be weird, like if you have some guy in Napoleonic, like with a Napoleonic warfare with a machine gun or a spear or something like that. To be anachronistic.
But of course, if you were introducing realism into a situation where you're fighting giant bugs on an alien planet, the people at the back would simply move. they'd take a half step to the right to be able to get a line of sight. They wouldn't need to. People wouldn't need to kneel down or whatever, would they? Because I'm sure if modern military they you know, people move. We have that ability. And I guess you don't really need to introduce anything which is complex or, in this case, slightly unrealistic, where the more realistic thing would be you take a slight step to the right so that you've got line of sight as well.
For the listeners at home and for Al here, I would like to refer everyone to episode 3, where we discussed fun versus realism in strategy games.
It was a good episode.
It was actually.
It was a good episode, yeah. I enjoyed that one.
I think you need to build the game around a central mechanic, right? So, like I said, for example, Company of Heroes, again, it's not realistic for a tank to be firing directly at someone who's 5 feet away and they don't die. I mean, but that's just because the game is not built like that. But it has a central mechanic around it. And I when the games do that central mechanic well, I think it just works, right? It fits and it feels good to play, because when you're fighting, like if you watch the Starship Trooper movie, when you're seeing the guys fighting, only the guys at the front are fighting. So it's nice to see that replicated in a video game, because Starship Troopers is my favorite movie of all time. So it's a weird choice. I know. I like weird movies like that.
That's that speaks volumes about your personality.
I love Starship Troopers.
It is a fantastic movie. It is. I remember when I was in my mid-teens and I was watching Starship Troopers, and this is completely unrelated, but I thought it was quite funny. I was in my bedroom watching Starship Troopers on my little TV on a DVD, and my dad came in to complain about something I'd done. Either hadn't put the trash out or hadn't done the pots, or you know, typical dad thing. And so we came in and I paused the movie. And it was
the shower scene. Yeah.
So he came in. Started having a go. So I've paused it, and it was brilliant. A case of, you know, why have you not done this? You sat up here watching porn when you should be doing. It's not porn. It's space bugs. It's about killing bugs and about how people kneel down and don't move to the right ever so slightly in order to get line of sight. It's not porn. About the titties.
I have a counterargument to that. Not moving to the right. So why didn't Napoleonic soldiers do that? They could. They had space. I can tell you why. I'm just asking you. Why do you think they didn't do that? Because if you fire again directly to someone's ear, you're gonna seriously injure them, and since you were using black gunpowder, like, you would probably set their clothes on fire. Wow. So that's why they had the kneel down thing, and because it had to be you need to train people to do that, because otherwise they would set each other on fire using black powder. it's really stupid, but there's a reason as to why that took so long to be implemented, because it's obvious, right? Even archers can do that in the Middle Ages. With guns, it's weird how guns took so long to evolve to that point. Just another.
Yeah, there was a lot of evolutions with the locks and everything like that. But yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Well, that was informative.
Oh, we're gonna end the episode already.
I want to ask Tim something before we end, and then
go for it.
And then we'll call it a day. So. No, last week you missed the gauntlet. The gauntlet was thrown down.
I like
down.
Where this is going.
And Joe and I have a planned multiplayer matchup for Beyond Our Reason. So Joe's not here at the moment, Tim. So tell me the best strategy Beyond Our Reason for me to defeat Joe.
You can try to rush him, quick. I guess. You can make it rush. You can rush him.
So rush. Okay. All right.
Where did that come from? Why are you two guys fighting over being the other reason? What's the lore behind that?
You can go back and listen to episode 13 and find out all about it.
Very good. Very good. So does that mean you're in, Nuno? A three-way gauntlet.
Sure, why not? Let's go. I can be the guy who
like it.
And then I'll always fighting Joe, and I'm in my corner, just building my little army, and then I'll swallow them both. Wait, this is not sound right at all. And I'll kill them both.
I like it. Well, we're gonna have to look into getting a stream like that. Going, I guess that I'm excited for that. I have a lot to say about the game, so that's going to be cool.
You can commentate.
Oh yeah,
I can. I have done that. I've actually commentated tournaments in the past, and like
there
game,
you go.
So
there you go.
Can you imagine, like, Tim 6 hours later, all of us just turtling, just passed out in the chair, just for fuck's sake, make something happen, set me free.
No, he hasn't moved out of his base. So I made a mistake.
Well, there's a very special map for that, where it's like the lava that rises up and that pushes everyone towards the middle.
Well, that's just stressful.
So Fortnite.
That's Fortnite. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. It's a real pleasure to be here with you, Al and Nuno. I had a good time. Thanks for listening at home. Be ready for next week, a mystery episode. Have a good one. See you next week.
See you guys.
Adios.